Hi, this is Russ Taft.
Hi, this is John Olifanti.
Hi, this is John Schlippen-Petra.
Hi, this is Kim Boyce.
Hey, everybody, Stephen Curtis Chapman here, and you are listening to Jesus Freaks Final to Digital.
Hi, I'm Jason Huddle, host of Jesus Freaks Final to Digital. Before we get into this week's program, I just wanted to take a moment to thank you for downloading this episode and giving us a listen. If you really like what you hear, we'd love to have your support. How can you do that, you say? Well, I'm glad you asked. Simply visit patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast and become a monthly sponsor. Now, you can do that for as little as two measly dollars per month, or you can go higher and get special perks, like advance access to episodes when available, the opportunity to submit questions I will ask our artists on future episodes, and even your very own Jesus Freaks t-shirt. Again, that's patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast. Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And hey, if you'd like your business or organization to become a sponsor of this program, let us know by visiting our website, JesusFreaksPodcast.com, and click on the Become a Sponsor link at the bottom of the page. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's get on with the show.
This is Scott Allen from Mylan and Broken Heart, and you are listening to the Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital Podcast.
Paul Rohrbach always knew two things. He loved the Lord and he loved music, and he wanted his music to have meaning.
When I'm on my deathbed, I want to look at my life and felt like all this hard work and sacrifice and the money that goes into this changed somebody's life and left behind something that has eternal consequences, you know? I don't want to just feel like it was about entertaining people.
Paul was the drummer and one of the founding members of the Christian grunge group Grammatrain back in the early 90s. But when their lead singer recanted his faith, Paul was left reeling.
It's my family, you know, and I was really hurt when he recanted his faith, too. I've asked myself, I've been in two bands with pastor's kids who have recanted their faith, and both times it hurt really bad. And I would try to examine myself and ask myself why this hurts me so much.
Today, we'll talk with Paul Rohrbach, drummer for Grammatrain, and now PJ Bostick, about his life and faith, and how he's never lost sight of the fact that his career is a gift.
And when someone says thank you about the music, you know, you can say you're welcome, but I feel like people will never know how much I mean it.
Right.
And there's no way I can say you're welcome and feel satisfied that this person knows how grateful I am that they're here and that they are supporting us and, you know, that they like what I've done.
That's all coming up right now on this episode of Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital, a presentation of Cabco Media Group, a preferred podcast of Way FM, and now part of the NewReleaseToday.com podcast network. I'm your host, Jason Huddle. Today, we want to welcome on to the show Paul Rohrbach, drummer for the awesome Christian metal group Grammatrain. Thank you so much for coming on the program, man.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Before we got on, I was just listening to Lonely House, the whole album, and it still rocks. It's timeless, man. It still is so good. And the messages, you guys came right out of the gate. That was your first studio album. And you guys came right out of the gate with some strong messages, like in Execution, where you're talking about, you know, drowning the unborn's voice for woman's choice. I mean, these are strong words coming from a rookie band.
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, honestly, I'm just as bold now as I was then. But back then, there certainly wasn't the pressure to zip it up, you know.
Yeah.
And we had felt like we had more freedom, I guess, to sing about whatever you wanted to. I still honestly sing about whatever I want, but yeah, it was just that youthful, you know, you're angry, you're just pouring your heart into what you're doing. And that's what came out. And that was one of the things that has always been important to me with music is that, you know, Grammatrain, we were never writing for the hit. We were never trying to write a hit song for radio. We just wrote about the things we cared about and we wrote music we wanted to listen to. And I think that's what made it so genuine.
Right. So Grammatrain was made up of you, your brother, Dalton, and Pete Stewart, who served as lead guitarist and vocalist, right?
Yeah. Pete and I were just jamming out, and, you know, we were looking for a singer, and Dalton was living with me. So we just, for fun, had him come down and jam with us. We had no idea this would turn into anything. And then one day Pete sang this song, and he asked me, you know, what do you think? You know, should I give this a shot? And I was like, yeah, you know, why don't you just be the singer, and we'll go for it. And then we had so much fun in this tiny basement in Seattle. Like, the ceiling was right there, and we're all crammed in this little tiny room, and it was so loud, so much fun.
Well, let me ask you about being in Seattle. I want to get into your faith in just a second, but now you touched on the fact that you guys were out of Seattle, and I can definitely hear a lot of, especially in Lonely House, that project. I can hear a lot of Pearl Jam and those kind of influences. What was it like to be at the heart of the grunge movement in the early 90s when it was going on? Was there a certain concentration on that kind of music? And what was it like to be around all those incredible bands that were there at the time?
Well, for me, originally, I was sort of afraid of it because all I listened to for years was Rush. And I was never into the, like, the four big metal bands, you know, like Twisted Sister and Motley Crue and Rat and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I was never into that metal vibe. I was still into the musicianship oriented kind of metal thing. But I remember I didn't get it at first. And one of my drum students was asking me to teach him some Alice in Chains and some Soundgarden. And I remember the day I was walking home from the bus stop, and I was listening to Bad Motorfinger, and the light went on, and I got it. And it suddenly, my world just changed. And interestingly enough, I actually went to school with Ben Shepherd, the bass player for Soundgarden. We weren't like close friends, but, you know, he's always been nice to us. And his brother Henry ended up shooting the first Grammatrain video, the Believe video.
Very cool. Small
world. But yeah, it was pretty cool. And, you know, I didn't realize until when I joined Bloodgood and toured in 92, Seattle was so secluded to that kind of music. It was just very inclusive. It was like, this was all you really heard for the most part. I thought it was like that across the whole country. And as soon as we got out of Seattle, suddenly you would hear Pearl Jam and then you heard Scorpions on the same station.
Right.
And that just didn't happen. You had your classic rock station, KISW in Seattle, but really everyone just walked away from the metal thing. And the only band I didn't walk away from was Rush. I did kind of just really get into this modern rock, grunge, whatever you want to call it. And
they were their own thing. Yeah.
Yeah. The honesty, even though a lot of it was negative and it bothered me, to be honest, but the honesty was there. And I'm always looking for honesty in music. I just like lyrics that are real and thoughtful and come from the heart, you know, and that was there for sure.
Absolutely. Well, let's back up a little bit before we get into the Grammatrain years and just talk about, you know, how you came to know Christ and what that experience was like for you.
Well, I grew up in a, I would say, sort of a lukewarm Catholic environment. You know, my mom went to church and I wanted to go to church, and I went a couple times, and, you know, I was always really bored, but I wanted to go. I was always really fascinated with God. And there was a bus that came around and they knocked on the door and asked if, you know, we wanted to go to church with them. So I went with, maybe it was a Baptist thing or something. And it wasn't a good experience. You know, I was scolded for drawing the Pink Panther while the pastor was up there. He was like literally pulling checks out of the, and this is not a rip on Baptist church at all. Sure. I don't even know for sure if it was Baptist, but they were pulling these checks out and they're like, praise God, $10,000. I don't remember if they were mentioning the names. They probably weren't, but in my mind, they're mentioning names. And it was really bad. But I'm sitting there and I'm drawing Pink Panther, and the youth leader guy like smacked my hand and he goes, pay attention. And I'm just, even as a little kid, I knew how ridiculous that was.
Right.
So but it still didn't chase me away. I had some bad experiences and some weird experiences. I had a drunk priest that was trying to get me baptized, and he was always just walking into our house. But we moved to Kingston from Seattle across the water, and our neighbors had a really close relationship with God. And they would talk about how God would speak to them in their heart, you know, and they had this really close relationship. And I'd never seen that before. And I was like, man, you know, I want that, you know, I want God to talk to me. Like, I just wanted to be close to God. And so even though, because my childhood, while not the worst, was kind of messed up. You know, my parents both worked. There was no parents around. I did a lot of bad things. You know, I was a crazy kid. I had a lot of bad habits. You know, I'm still suffering from, you know, a lot of my bad habits from my youth. It was a slow walk for me. I really wanted to be this man of God, but I just had so much baggage. And I tried to get involved in a school youth group. And in fact, I wrote a song about this on one of my records called Crime. They were so mean to me. You know, I had long hair. I still kind of had a mouth, you know. I was never a mean kid. But these terrible rumors that I was trapping other kids in the youth group in a alley with nunchucks and beating them up.
Just, oh my goodness.
I mean, crazy, crazy stuff. But yet I didn't let that chase me away either. I wanted to get close to God. And just so through reading my Bible and trying to surround myself with people that I thought were quality people, luckily in high school, I was in a Christian band called Paragon, and Jeff, the guitar player, he was crazy. He was funny, but he was a pretty solid guy, and him and some of his friends were solid. It was good for me to be around a few solid people. Story.
Let me ask you about Dalton. Was he kind of along with you for the ride? Did you bring him to Christ, or was he on his own little journey?
His was probably similar to mine. He's 5 years younger than me, so I don't know how much of the Catholic part of it. And this is not a rip on Catholic. It might have sounded like I was ripping on Catholicism. I really wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, at times I rip on Catholicism and Protestant. I mean, nobody's perfect. There's always something somewhere that you're going to disagree with. And to me, that just means that you're thinking for yourself. You know, I don't think you should just find one person and believe everything this person says. I think it's good to keep seeking truth and studying scripture and getting on your knees before God and spending a lot of time just really trying to seek God's heart, you know? Anyway, I think he just kind of grew up in Christianity like me. You know, he had his issues too that he had to work out. But I'll tell you what, man, Dalton, he's a really wonderful kid. I say kid because he's 5 years old. We're all old men. He's a wonderful guy. He's got a huge heart. He's always been a really kind person. And Dalton's often an inspiration to me, to the kind of person I want to be, because I just see how kind he is. You know, he's still like me. You know, we're the Roarbacks. We have our issues we're working through. But he's a good kid, man. He's a really good guy.
Good. So let's jump back to where we were and talking about you guys forming Grandma Train. And I think you put together like a little demo and sent that in. Were you just kind of like, yeah, let's put together a demo and see what happens? Or did you really think that you guys were destined to do this?
I don't think we thought we were destined. I think we all were, particularly Pete and I, were hungry for it. Like, we wanted to succeed. Dalton is good at everything. He's, you know, he's a computer genius. He was kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, sounds good, you know, whatever. But music has been the only thing I've been able to do well. And so for me, I really wanted this to, you know, and I'd been on the road with Bloodgood for a couple of years, and I really enjoyed touring a lot. And so it's in my blood. And so we recorded our demo But we had no idea that it was going to generate so much attention. And we had all these labels calling us. I think we were signed within a year of even being together. And wow. People were shocked when we were out on the road, you know, warming up for Petra and telling people we'd only been together a couple of years. And we're together a lot longer before you get a record out and start touring with bands like that. We were very, very lucky. I had no idea back then how lucky I was. To be honest, I took a certain amount of it for granted that I regret.
That's got to be interesting. You just mentioned opening up for Petra. That's kind of a different audience a little bit than especially from when you guys first started. Did they respond well to that, or did you find that you did better when it was more of your crowd?
We did well enough. You know, a crowd's that big, there's always going to be a certain amount of people that really like what you're doing. I can't tell you how many bands that took us out on the road told us that were good friends of ours. You know, they ended up being friends by the end of the tour, but they told us flat out, they said, we'll never bring a heavy band out on the road again because the momentum just went down. You know, it was like Gramma Train was so heavy.
Right.
And then all due respect to Petra or Big Tent Revival, you know, we toured with them third day.
Wow. That's a contrast.
And I'll tell you what, man, a lot of those guys were great. Third day, I think, stood out really the most as them just being really outstanding Christians. Like, there was just something about them. They were very serious about their Bible studies. They always had Bible studies, and we were all required to be there. And there was just something very unique about them. And that's not saying anything bad about anyone else. I'd say 90% of all of the other individuals that we were with were really great people. You know, John Schlitt was amazing. That guy just always had a smile on his face.
Yeah. We just had him on the show a few weeks ago.
He's still the same way.
Like, we laugh so much. I hardly got through the interview because we were just laughing so much, and he's so full of energy.
He's somebody I really wish I had kept in touch with. You know, we'd bump into each other from time to time at a festival, and, you know, I would always think, it's, you know, is he going to care? It's just the drummer from Gramma Train saying, hey, but he always just treated me like an old friend, you know?
Yeah.
And I wish I had kept in touch with him a little more, because he's just so, just all that positive energy. He's just such a great heart for the Lord. And that guy can go eat a bucket full of chocolate and he can just go right out and sing, you know? The rest of us have to work at it.
Right. You have to exercise those pipes and all that stuff. So there was a big difference between Lonely House, which is your first studio project, and then Flying, which was your second. Flying, it wasn't as raw. It was very polished. And I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. It just was. Did you guys do that out of choice? Did you guys feel like that's what you needed to do in order to go up to the next level? What was that about, that change in sound from the first album to the second?
It just happened. Like, we didn't. In fact, I remember, I got dirty looks for this too. About halfway through, I just stopped everyone. I said, so do we need to reassess? Because when we went into this, we were talking about going for more of a Brandon O'Brien kind of production, you know, going for more of a Rage Against the Machine, really gritty, earthy, you know, and it was obviously not going in that direction. I said, can we just talk about it for a second? I just want to make sure that we're all okay with the direction that it's going in. And the consensus was things are sounding good. And a lot of the inspiration for that recording came from, I mean, Pete was really into, he was reading all these books about how Led Zeppelin recorded in the Beatles. And he was always like, we found this chamber there at Ardent, and we had him clear out all the stuff. They were using it for storage, but we wanted to use a real chamber for the verbs instead of like fake verbs and stuff. So the thing is, the album was really recorded extremely organic. It was a very organic process. It did end up sounding kind of polished, which I was fine with. I thought it sounded very nice. And that was the direction that modern rock was going in, you know.
Sure.
I even predicted that, you know, there's going to be bands that sound like Nirvana or Alice in Chains or whatever. They're just going to be more produced, you know. And then Creed came along, and that was pretty much what they were.
Exactly.
Prettier sounding version of what was going on in the early 90s. And so I felt like we just naturally evolved into that. So there was nothing contrived. If anything, I would say we didn't mean to sound that pretty, just kind of did. But I think it's a great sounding record. I'm really happy with it.
I lost myself. Rather images I had of me to tell. How different from truth they were.
Kind of derogatory sense. It was just a different sound. Yeah. Lonely House is very, like you said, gritty, and the bass is very raw and dirty, and just it is heavy. And then Flying came out, and I was like, okay, this is good. I enjoy it, but you cannot compare the two albums side by side, because you know somebody's going to be disappointed one way or the other.
So. And it was budget and time too. I think we only had like a couple of weeks to do Lonely House, and we had a really low budget.
Yeah.
We were in the studio for 2 months for Flying. We got to write a lot of it in the studio. It was just, we were just got to have at it and had an engineer assigned to us, and we just sit in the studio and write. And it was much higher budget.
Sure.
So I'm sure that had a lot to do with it too.
Sure. So you guys then did a live album. At the end of the live album, you can hear you guys basically say, that's it. We're done. We're broken up. What happened?
It's really complicated, but just to give you the tip of the pyramid, Dalton needed to quit the band to go try and straighten some things out with his wife. And he did the right thing. And poor Dalton, you know, he's been through a couple divorces that he didn't deserve. Let me just say that, because like I said, he really is a great guy. But so with Dalton out of the band, we did look for a bass player. We tried a couple different people out. We even added a guitar player and tried a 4-piece thing for a little bit. And we finished out the festival season, but we did have some trouble trying to find that fit. Forefront offered Pete, they talked to him about maybe doing a solo thing, you know, and if I was in Pete's shoes, maybe I would have done the same thing. You know, he said here, and he went, you know, me, Pete and I decided, we talked about it before he talked to Forefront. We said we could just break up or find a bass player and find another label or something. You know, we weren't really sure what we were going to do, but ultimately Pete decided to do a solo record with Forefront. And in retrospect, that really was the best thing, you know, because as everybody knows, you know, Pete later recanted his faith. Do you know about that?
Yeah. And I was going to plan on getting into that in a second, but now is as good a time as any. Right. Tell us a little bit about that and what happened with Pete.
So when all this was going on with Forefront and everything, I mean, I'll be honest, I was really, really hurt. I was devastated. I was angry and I just felt like my life was over, you know. It was. But at some point down the road, you know, Pete recanted his faith, and him and I guess the guitar player, I can't remember his name, from a POD, kind of went through the same thing. And so those guys started something, and we were still friends. And I was really trying hard not to make Pete feel judged or anything. I mean, Pete's my family, you know, and I was really hurt when he recanted his faith too. I've asked myself, I've been in two bands with pastors' kids who have recanted their faith, and both times it hurt really bad. And I would try to examine myself and ask myself why this hurts me so much. If I say I'm taking it personally, that could easily be misunderstood. It's, it's so difficult to explain, but it just hurt. It just killed me. And I was, I didn't understand, you know, and at the same time, I'm trying to make conscious decisions not to make anybody feel judged. And according to Pete Dalton, I had done a good job of that. And that made me feel really good. You know, when in an interview, he was saying that he never felt judged by us, you know, through that whole process. Right. But so years later, when Pete felt like he was in a place where he could write an album with us that wouldn't contain any lyrics that were offensive to me or Dalton, he was more ready to maybe do another record. And so then we did the, I keep calling it Decennium. What was that record called? Imperium?
Imperium, yes.
And I really enjoyed recording that record, but that it made me realize, you know, doing a record is, it's a lot of work, especially for me. I'm a perfectionist and I have a vision and I work really, really hard. And it's very physical, very physically demanding, and takes time away from my kids. And to put all that work into something that doesn't have something eternal in it was kind of empty for me. And I didn't realize it until I was done with the record that record, I'm not going to say it's meaningless, and I don't want to take anything away from any of the Grammatrain fans who really like that record. I think it's a great record, but it just doesn't mean as much to me. There's nothing. So when I'm on my deathbed, I want to look at my life and felt like all this hard work and sacrifice and the money that goes into this, I want to feel like this changed somebody's life and left behind something that has eternal consequences, you know, that I don't want to just feel like it was about entertaining people. And there's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but just for me, because I am so wrapped up in this and my body takes a beating, you know, I've got all kinds of physical problems from playing drums and guitars. And as a multi-instrumentalist, I'm, you know, my tendons are always moving. And even my own lyrics, my fourth record, which is about to come out, has gotten, the message in it is getting much stronger because I'm feeling even more so that I really want to have something to say.
Illumination of skin and blood. That modern culture is forged from our human senses.
Turn to our interview with Paul Rohrabach from Grammatrain in just a moment. But first, we all know that sometimes life can leave you with more questions than answers, and that's why things like truth, friendship, and hope are so very important. I want to invite you to join New Hope Worship Center online. They can help you find the answers to life's biggest questions. They have live streaming services every Sunday at 10:45 a.m. on the New Hope Worship Center YouTube channel. There, you will receive the Word, have the opportunity to worship and pray. Or, of course, you can watch at your convenience at newhopewc.org. And if you need to call or talk with someone, they would love to help you. Just call 704-786-0155. That's 704-786-0155. And again, their website is newhopewc.org. And now let's return to Paul Rohrabach.
Engrossed in luring, invasive glow.
just to be about impressing people with a bunch of cool drum fills or guitar riffs or being a rock star. The music thing has always been about the music first for me. When I was younger, the rock star thing was kind of fun and I liked the attention for a little bit until I started getting all that attention. Then it started kind of scaring me and it started making me a little nervous. I remember the first time I had to walk through a crowd at a Gramatrain show to because we didn't have any dressing rooms, and I had to walk through the crowd to use the bathroom. And I was walking through this crowd and I was looking down and I was suddenly like afraid, sort of. And I got nauseated, and it was like some sort of social anxiety or something, I guess. And that was when I realized that and not that we got super famous, but that's when I realized that the popularity part of it, I wasn't used to, and I didn't like it as much. And I would still go out at the end of the night and meet with people. And the cool thing about that is, you know, at the end of the show, I was always really tired and I was scared to death to just go talk to people. I'm always afraid I'm going to say something stupid, you know?
Yeah.
And when someone says thank you about the music, you know, you can say you're welcome, but I feel like people will never know how much I mean it.
Right.
And there's no way I can say you're welcome and feel satisfied that this person knows how grateful I am that they're here and that they are supporting us and, you know, that they like what I've done. But I would go out there with an empty cup every night. And by the time it was done, my cup was always full. And God showed me that night after night. And so I started to kind of learn that, like, okay, Paul, you don't want to go talk to people right now, but this is what you do, and this is for them. And 99% of the time, my cup was full. Just seeing these people be blessed. And there was always a couple people I would end up having a really good conversation with. You know, I'm getting off track on the question, aren't I?
No, but that's fine, because that's what ministry is about, right? Whether you're a musician or a pastor or a children's teacher, you know, I've been in two of those three positions and I can relate. You know, you go in and some nights you're just not feeling it. You know, you just assume stay at home, curl up on the couch and watch some TV, but you do it because that's what you've been called to do. And by the end of the night, you're so glad you did it.
Yeah.
That's ministry. And I thank you for making that sacrifice for other people.
And you are welcome. You really are.
No, seriously.
And thank you. Like when people pay the compliments and you say, thank you. Like, I really do mean it. Like, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to people that bought our records and came to our shows and all of that. I'm especially now in retrospect, you know, I mean, like I said, I took some of that for granted.
Yeah.
And I took all the work that our label did for granted because, well, I won't get into the reasons, but I felt like they had let us down from time to time. And in some ways, honestly, they did, but they put a lot of work into Gramatrain and they believed in us. And there was just a whole crew of people working their tails off to try to help us sell records, you know, and I'm really, really grateful for that. And a little embarrassed about some of the ways I took it for granted.
Well, I mean, you're older and wiser now. And of course, I'm sure, and I've heard it from other musicians, when you're in it, you lose track of the fact that this is a season, you know, it's unless your name is, you know, Mick Jagger, or Keith Richards, you're not going to do this forever.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, just like any other privilege that some of us have had in being able to do things that put us in the limelight or we're getting paid to do what we absolutely love to do. I think, you know, it's easy to lose sight of that fact. So don't beat yourself up too much on that.
I've heard that so many times, Paul, you beat yourself up too much.
It's part of growing up. But so let's talk about a new project. Tell us about your new album, man.
Well, it's my fourth record. People always want to know why I go by PJ Bostic on this. And when I was in Gramatrain, my grandfather asked us if we would change our name to Bostic, because I think he found out later in life that we were Bostics and changed his name. I'm not sure the whole story, but he wanted us to carry on the family name of Bostic because that's who we were. And selfishly, I didn't want to do it because I had a name for myself. And I was afraid that if I change it to Bostic, it would be kind of starting over again or something. And it didn't take long for me to regret that. And my grandfather passed, you know, and my grandfather and I weren't close because my dad and him had this rift when I was young. I loved my grandpa. I just, like, as a kid, I just worshiped him, you know? And then I felt like I was kind of robbed out of a relationship with him. And when I was 18, I kind of put my foot down and said, I want to know my grandfather. How do I get a hold of him? And then kind of started a new relationship with him, which led to years later, him flying up to Seattle and reuniting with my dad, and everything was great. And he wanted us to change the name. So I'm doing it to honor my grandfather, Paul. I think his name's Paul Robert Bostick. He was a very talented musical person. He was a pilot. He was an amazing guy. And so, yeah, the PJ Bostick, Paul Joseph is my name, and then Bostick to honor my father. So this record is, of everything I've ever done, I could say, just musically speaking, it was the hardest record I've ever done. I pushed myself as a drummer. Like, I'd been listening to probably a little too much Dream Theater. And you know, you throw that at somebody who grew up listening to Rush, and that's just kind of, you know, a toxic formula for a lot of drums being hit.
It's already embedded in your DNA now. You can't
get it. Yeah, yeah. So I did push myself, and I bought a new kit, and which really inspired me. It's the heaviest album that I've done. Lyrically, the second half of it is a kind of a concept, sort of warning people about the dangers of, and just sort of calling out the progressive church and the heresy that's the new age Gnostic stuff that's creeping into the church. And, you know, but particularly the fact there's one song I was going to subtitle A Letter to Richard Rohr. I just, all this new teaching about we've all been saved from the beginning and Jesus didn't die for your sins. And the Trinity isn't Father and Son and Holy Spirit. It's three dots on a line. And the real power comes from the middle, and it's feminine energy. And, you know, the earth is God and we are the fourth part of the Trinity. You know, the Trinity is actually four people. It's us and Father, Son, Holy Spirit, or whatever, just all this weird, creepy stuff, you know. And, you know, there's no Satan, there's no demons. And I mean, boy, you start going down that road, you really got to start ripping a lot of pages out of your Bible. Right. And a lot of it stems, I think, from politics, but I think really what it comes down to is Satan is just, we know that he's clever and he's a deceiver, and he has just slowly been able to create all these weird teachings into the church, and it sounds good to people. And for a lot of people, I think it comes from a good place. You know, I think they end up sort of loving people more than God, you know, like there's no more tough love. And I think it's true that Christians have been at times too rude and hateful. And I keep hearing people talk like that's been the majority of it, but I haven't experienced that. I see it on the news. Like, you'll see some weird church out in some hick town that hates black people or something and thinks they're all going to hell. And you can have that shoved in your face every day or something else. And you can kind of get this impression that Christians are all hateful. And it's kind of funner to talk about that stuff. But in my own life, you know, I'll use Les Carlson as an example. He's the singer for Bloodgate, if you don't know. When I was in Paragon, I was in this Christian band, Paragon, when I was younger, and I had gotten someone pregnant. And that's the girl that's on the cover of Lonely House. It was my daughter. So we were taking a hiatus for me to straighten out my life and figure out what we were going to do. And when that happened, during that time, Les Carlson called me and said that Bloodgood was looking for a drummer, and we had warmed up for them. And he really liked my drumming and asked if I'd be interested in joining the band. So I told him what I was going through. I said, I don't think it would be cool to ditch my friends. They're taking a time out for me. And I don't think I should be bringing my problems into your band. You know, I just got someone pregnant. How's that going to look? You know, and you don't want this. And even though this is kind of some of that baggage I was talking about, as my Christian walk, you know, I genuinely loved God with all my heart, and it killed me that I was promiscuous, just killed me. But Les said to me, I thought he was going to be like, whoa, okay, thanks for telling me. I'll see you around. But he said, well, he said, first of all, there's no judgment here. He said, no condemnation. He said, if you change your mind, let me know. You know, and I was shocked. Wow. I thought he was going to be, you sinner, you know, you don't deserve, you know. And then later I ended up joining the band and, you know, found out those guys are very real. So I have in my own life have experienced very little of that harsh Christianity thing. I've experienced some of it coming at myself because I play rock music and, you know, we all know Christian rock is evil. So, but anyway, so I think sometimes that's used an excuse. I think people say, well, there's been mean Christians out there that have said mean things. Therefore, we just can't say anything that sounds mean anymore. We can only say good things and we can't talk about sin. We can't talk about Satan. Everything has to be fluffy and happy. And we're going to love man more than God's word. There's something kind of weird like that going on. And it was hard for me to watch because this church, I'm involved in a few churches, so no one will know who I'm talking about, but I watched this church slowly start slipping into that. And it was killing me seeing these really, really wonderful people kind of start getting duped by this. So there's a lyric in one of my songs that says, how long shall I wait to take a step forward or walk away? And I'm thinking I either need to walk out of this church or I need to take a step forward and start being more verbal about this. And that's basically what this record is.
On the money, especially in this era of cancel culture, where if you say something that is contrary to what the mainstream media or the mainstream, I guess, pop culture says you should say, then they're going to make sure that you are erased from existence, right? Your social media is, you know, a band. They're going to make sure that they're not going to give you a voice at all. And I think now more than ever, Christians have to be bold. Yeah. They have to be willing to sing lyrics like you guys did almost 30 years ago on Lonely House and be unafraid to say what the truth is. You know, my pastor is always talking about the plumb line, the Bible being the plumb line, you know, and Idle Cure even sang about how people, this years ago, Idle Cure sang about how people try to take the word and shape it to their needs, you know, whatever they want it to say, but the plumb line is the plumb line. You cannot, when you're establishing a plumb line, just because you want it to go a certain way doesn't mean that it will or it should. Yeah. And I think we as Christians have to be bolder about that. Alluding back to what you said about Pete, I think that's why it hurts so much for you because, you know, it's just like we're all part of the body of Christ, right? And he was part of the body. And when you lose a part of your body, you might be able to continue on without that part, but it still hurts.
Yeah. And we were close. I mean, when you're touring in a band, the first year we toured, we did almost 200 shows that year and we lived on the road. And I mean, Pete was my brother and I still love Pete and I would take a bullet for Pete. He's in Nashville now, we kind of keep in touch once in a while, but we don't have a lot in common. So
is he still committed to recanting his faith? He hasn't budged on that?
As far as I know, Pete has seen my posts on Facebook and I've seen his, and you know, we know that we very strongly disagree politically, and especially with the political climate these days, just causing so much division. Like, you know, people are always asking if there will be another Graham Train record. And it's funny because we never have officially broken up. We're just in a state of limbo. But right now, I'm not going to say because of where Pete stands politically. I'm going to say because where Pete stands and where I stand, and we're on complete opposite ends. And then, of course, spiritually too, I just don't see it. I don't see another Graham Train record. I would love it if Pete did come back to Christ and wanted to write a record that would change somebody's life. That I would be all over. I would be all into that.
Any consideration of having another vocalist in?
No. That'd be like replacing Kurt Cobain in Nirvana, you know. I would say Pete is definitely the least expendable of the three of us. You know, he just has his sound and his attitude and the way he approached the music, and it just wouldn't be the same. And I've gotten kind of spoiled writing my own music. I've become kind of a hermit this in my playground here. I'm getting used to not having to submit my work to a committee. I miss it at the same time though, because I always just like, I want to be a part of a family with the band.
Sure.
When it comes down to it, I would rather just be a drummer in someone else's band. If there was the ideal band with really great guys, it's so important for me to work with really great people who are loving and kind and no egos. And man, if I could find that, and finding people that were writing music that I could really sink my teeth into, I would do that. But it's hard to find. And, you know, Graham and Train got to a certain extent, and then the band broke up. And then I had another band, Gideon's Press, which turned into the Illustrated Band. And we were doing very well. And then he recanted his faith and the band broke up and this and that. And so part of me is going, you know, I'm tired of being, as a drummer, you're kind of at the mercy of pretty much the front man, you know, and you're kind of a facilitator of what he has to say. And I was tired of putting all this work into something to have it just crumble. And so I prayed hard about this. I'll tell you what, this is a miracle. The music that I'm doing, the only thing I can compare it to is this. You know, I have twins, and I begged God on my face out here on the floor. I just begged God for months, please give me twins. I wanted twins so bad. And I won't get into why right now, but this was really important to me, begging God for twins for months and months and months and months. And we weren't taking any fertility drugs, and there's no twins in my family. And we went in for that ultrasound, and she said, "So how do you feel about two of them?" And my wife, God gave me my twins. He doesn't give me everything I ask for. I don't believe in the, you know, name it and claim it, and you know, God's going to give me whatever. But there are certain heartfelt things that I've really poured my heart out for that really meant something to me. And that was one of them. And these records I'm doing, you know, the whole story of all these records have always been, how am I going to pull this off? You know, can I write a song? You know, do I have a voice? Can I play guitar? I wasn't that serious of a guitar player when I started. And I've begged God for lyrics, begged God for a voice and for music. And people can say all they want, "Well, no, Paul, you've got some talent and you're using the talent God gave you." There's really something more than that going on. Like, I really do believe that God has just done something. When I say great, I don't mean my music's great and you should all, I just mean, for me personally, he's done this for me, and he's always provided the gear, the technology, stuff I'm not good at, you know, everything. This is a gift from God, period. So I'm using this to the best of my ability to try to offer something that points at God. You know, there's some songs about politics, or might be a song about ranting about the music industry or whatever. And there's some personal stuff there too, but there's always going to be a prayer, or there's going to be something about God. And I'm begging him for a worship album. I want to write a worship album so bad, but when I try and write worship lyrics, they just sound contrived.
Yeah.
I'm finding I have to be really emotional and usually kind of upset to get out my pen and the words just start sort of flowing, you know?
Well, if you ever do that, we would love to hear it, man.
I hope I do. I really would love to have it'd be the same kind of music, you know, but right. I would love just to write lyrics that are just more beautiful and more uplifting. But I would really like to write a worship album.
Well, Paul Rohrabach, former drummer of Grandma Train and now PJ Bostick, man, thank you so much for your contribution to Christian metal. And we are excited about your new project. Can't wait to hear some more of it. We're going to listen to some of it here in just a second.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. It was my honor.
Once again, I do want to thank Paul Rohrabach for being on the program with us today, and I really appreciated his candidness. I hope you did too. Hey, if you like this program and want to support us, there's a couple of ways you can do that. First of all, join our Facebook group. Just look for Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital podcast group page on Facebook. You can join in on the discussion. We can talk about the different episodes. Sometimes the artists even chime in on that page as well. So you can do that. Just support us morally. If you'd like to support us financially, we'd love to have that support as well. You can simply go to patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast and become a sponsor, where you might even score some Jesus Freaks swag. So check that out at patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast. Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Next week, we are pleased to have Phil Joel. He was the awesome bassist for the Newsboys and also is part of Newsboys United. And he is a solo artist as well with a new project. So we are looking forward to our conversation with him, and I hope you will join us as well. Until then, you have been listening to Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital, a preferred podcast of Way FM and now part of the newreleasetoday.com podcast network. It is produced and hosted by yours truly, Jason Huddle, with special thanks to research assistant Kevin Jewell. I leave you this week with the title track from PJ Bostick's brand new release, Faith of Least Resistance. Until next week, God bless.
Are you a Gnostic or a Christian or a priest of the politically woke? Have you discovered something modern that appeases your soul? Have you found a way around the way to heaven with an effortless path? An idle gate forever open to the dubious mass.